Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us for today's brand new Helpline. I'm Courtney Butts, and this is where we like to focus on ways to help you live a healthier, happier, and pain-free life. We'll be taking your calls and answering your questions live in the studio today. We'll be opening up those phone lines soon, but as a reminder, please make sure you're in a quiet room when you call with your TV turned all the way down so that we can hear your question. Our number is 318-219-4569. That number will be on your screen. Today we are talking all about colon cancer. February is Cancer Prevention Awareness Month. March is Colon Cancer Prevention Awareness. And joining me today to talk about this is Dr. Cy Malaretti, an oncologist from Willis Knighton Cancer Center. Good afternoon, Doc. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Well, tell me, let's just jump right in. How common is colon cancer?
So colon cancer is one of the top five most commonly diagnosed cancers in here in United States and also worldwide. But annually there are about 109,000 to 125,000 new cases diagnosed each year. And even worldwide, it's even like 1.9 million cases. And there is also high amount of death rate associated with it as well. Worldwide, anywhere between 930,000 to a million cases of colon cancer related deaths that has been recorded, at least the last statistics in 2020.
Wow, yes, top five cancers?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Dang, so how preventable is this cancer?
It is one of those cancers that could be very preventable if caught early on. Mm-hmm. There are multiple modalities through which it could be screened. The most common modality of screening that's used that everybody knows is a colonoscopy. Mm-hmm. And I know I see patients all day, and there are patients who are not very hesitant about receiving the colonoscopy again, considering the invasive nature of the mm-hmm. procedure. But the things are a lot more advanced now regarding the preparation for the colonoscopy and for testing for colonoscopy, like evaluating during the procedure as well. There are other tests that could be done in the place of colonoscopy that could be useful in helping with the surveillance. Some of them are stool-based studies where mm-hmm. they check for blood in the stools, which could be done mm-hmm. yearly, or a DNA test that could be checked for abnormal cancer cells in the stool that could be done every 3 years or so. And most recently there are CT scans that could mm-hmm. be done in the lieu of colonoscopy. Who does not want to undergo colonoscopy as well, that have shown in benefit in surveillance. So before there used to be just colonoscopy, nowadays we have a lot more surveillance options in detecting this early on so that it could be addressed early on and have mm-hmm. better cure rates and improve overall survival in patients who have this.
Awesome. Yeah, that's good news there. Yeah. Right. So Louisiana has always been one of those states where we're pretty unhealthy. So the incidence of colon cancer in Louisiana compared to nationwide, is there a difference or higher or lower?
Yeah, that's a very good question, actually. Compared to the nationwide statistics, there is definitely a difference in the incidence of colon cancer. When I say incidence, the total number of new cases registered each year. For the recent statistics that I have noticed, there is about, nationwide, there are about 33 cases for 100,000 population, mm-hmm. whereas in Louisiana, it's almost about 40 cases per mm-hmm. 100,000 population. Mm-hmm. So I think in our state, it's even more important to increase this awareness and get patients to get the surveillance early on.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So what are some of these risk factors that maybe somebody watching today needs to look out for with colon cancer?
Right, that's a good question. So for risk factors, whenever I'm looking at the risk factors for colon cancer, I look at it in this way, where the risk factors that we can manage, risk factors that we don't have control over. Mm-hmm. The risk factors that we don't have control over are something like age or family history. All the population older than 50 years, the cancer risk increases, especially colon cancer. And then the family history, this is also important because in any person who has a family member with the diagnosis of colon cancer, especially like a younger family members with history of colon cancer, they should be tested for any involvement of genetic conditions that predispose them to have higher risk for colon cancer. Mm-hmm. And then the factors that could be modified, which are like diet. There are multiple studies. There is a big clinical research and everything that shows that the diet higher in the red meat, who has higher red meat consumption and low in fruits and vegetables, have higher risk of developing colon cancer. Mm-hmm. And also the most common risk factors that every doctor talks about is the smoking and excessive alcohol consumption. Mm-hmm. Which is definitely implicated in many cancers, but colorectal cancer, it's also a very high risk factor. And then one more risk factor I always talk about is the obesity. Mm-hmm. With the obesity epidemic that we have in the United States, it is also an increased risk factor with colon cancer. You know, any kind of physical activity, about 30 minutes a day, and weight loss would help decrease this risk over time.
Yeah, and it seems like red meats, processed meats, are a risk factor for not only colon cancer, but so many other cancers out there too. And fruits and vegetables, you know, as a dietitian, I know that that's very important for not mm-hmm. only overall health, but fiber, you know, plant-based sources. Is it because of how it impacts your gut?
Yeah, that is true. It's how it impacts the gut. It's still being researched on, but the gut microbiome or gut bacteria are important part of so many disease processes. Mm-hmm. The alterations in the gut bacteria can lead to inflammation, is also proven to cause cancers in the long term. That is very true. Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. good stuff. Mm-hmm. So tell me some of the symptoms. So if somebody is worried that they may have colon cancer, are there any early onset symptoms that someone might experience, and when should they come and see you?
Right. So the symptoms of colon cancer, again, these symptoms could be for the other conditions as well, but the most common symptoms that we worry about whenever we are evaluating a patient for colon cancer is abdominal pain or cramping, changes in the bowel habits, mm-hmm. Significant weight loss. That means that more than 10% of their body weight within the last couple of months, you know, the blood in the stools is also an important symptom that we need to worry about. And then being a cancer doctor and also part of a blood doctor as well, we also look for signs in the blood work like iron deficiency. Mm. Especially in older patients with the iron deficiency, the first question we ask is, have you been evaluated by a GI doctor to rule out, again, the presence of colon cancer, especially in older patients? When I say older patients older than 50 years.
Gotcha. I did not know that iron deficiency was maybe a symptom underlying. Yeah, and iron deficiency can be maybe a brought on by multiple different things, but it can also be brought on by colon cancer as
yes.
well.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Wow, you learn something new every day. Right. So let's say, what does the cancer diagnosis process look like? So for colon cancer specifically, how do you diagnose?
Right. So for the colon cancer diagnosis, you know, once patients go through the surveillance methods that we talked about before, or if they were diagnosed because they were having a different symptoms, the gold standard for it is the colonoscopy. Mm-hmm. So the colonoscopy would be done by either our gastroenterology colleagues or the general surgery colleagues, and then they can locate either this concerning lesion or a mass. And it would be biopsied, which means that they took a piece of the tissue, and it would be analyzed to prove the diagnosis of colon cancer.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, tell me about the disparities of people diagnosed with colon cancer. Are there any disparities, maybe race or gender?
Right. That's a good question. So, yes, there are some disparities in the, you know, especially in the registration of these new cases of colon cancer. In between men and women, men are slightly at higher risk of developing this colon cancer compared to the woman. And in different ethnicities, in United States, it is usually the American Indians and Alaskan Natives that have higher incidence, but a black non-Hispanic population also have very high incidence of the colon cancer. Even so, compared to the nationwide statistics, as we were talking before, in Louisiana, in that different ethnicities, it's even higher.
Gotcha.
So there is definitely more disparities among different genders and ethnicities.
Wow. Okay. Good to know. So we have Wayne on the line. Wayne, what is your question for Dr. Malaretti?
Yeah, hi. I've recently declined a colonoscopy, but I did have that Cologuard test, and I was just wondering what the doctor thinks the reliability and the accuracy of one of them are.
Right. So, you underwent a Cologuard test? Is it like a stool testing that you got done?
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. They're also very, the new tests are also very sensitive. But when I say sensitive, that means it has a good detection capabilities as well. The downside of that testing is, if at all, if it comes back positive, or if there is something that says this is not looking like this is an abnormal test, it has to be followed by the colonoscopy to for further evaluation.
That makes sense. Yeah. I got my results back and they said it was negative. So
that's
kind
good.
Of relieved that.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. I'm sorry, go on.
Oh, no, that's okay. I was letting you finish.
Right. So, in this stool-based testing, right, the frequency of how this testing is done, it could be different than a colonoscopy. If it is a stool testing that is just checking for blood, it is done every year. But if it is a stool testing that is done for abnormal DNA, proving that there is abnormal cancer cells or anything like that, it would be done every 3 years.
But that's kind of what I talked to them. They told me that it's good to get it checked every 3 years.
Right. That is right.
Okay. Well, man, I sure appreciate it and gives me a little bit of, encouragement anyway to think they'll be doing good for a change.
Yes,
so,
that is right.
Anyway, thank you. I hope you have a good afternoon. So,
you
thank
too.
You.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Wayne. Well, if you're just joining us, I've got Dr. Cy Malaretti with me from Willis-Knighton Cancer Center, and we are talking all about colon cancer. So if you have a specific question for him, please give us a call at 318-219-4569. All right, well, I have a couple more questions for you. So let's say that I was just diagnosed with colon cancer. What are the next steps? What would you do next after the diagnosis?
Right, so once the diagnosis has been established, the first and most important thing before even talking about the treatments or procedures, that we need to find out what stage the cancer is at. One way to do that, especially for colon cancer, is by a CT scan of the chest, abdomen, and pelvis. It's kind of like a whole body CT scan kind of thing, to rule out that, to make sure that the colon cancer is just in one region and not spread anywhere else. That, when I say anywhere else, it could be in the lymph nodes surrounding the colon, or it could be anywhere between in the liver or lungs. So that is important, because the treatment regimens or treatment protocols or plan changes with each stage. So identifying that is the most, first and foremost, an important step before even treatment planning.
Gotcha. And then tell us, what are some of the treatment options, just a general overview of the treatment options that we have available to us today?
Okay. So again, as we're talking about, the treatment options change with every stage. Earlier stages, if there is, let's say, patient gets diagnosed with colon cancer and he undergoes all these CT scans, there is no disease anywhere else, the most common treatment is the surgical resection. That the surgery doctors or colorectal surgeons, they would go ahead and take the mass out, or the concerning lesion out. And when doing that surgery, they also take out some lymph nodes for appropriate evaluation. So depending on that, the report after the surgery, patient would be, there are multiple factors that would be involved in making the decision whether the patient would be a candidate for further therapy. When I say further therapy, like a chemotherapy, you could ask, oh, doc, it's already been taken out. Why should we have a chemotherapy?
Right.
So the resection, the removal of the mass itself is taken out because all the cancer that you're able to look at is taken out. There are sometimes there are cancer cells that you can see and escape before the cancer is taken out. And then those cases, depending on the risk, the patient would be a candidate for 3 to 6 months of chemotherapy. And it is different by case basis.
Gotcha.
In advanced diseases, when I say advanced, once the cancer spreads from colon to distant organs like liver or lung or anything like that, most often it would be a combination of chemotherapy and different therapies called as targeted therapy and immunotherapies.
Gotcha. So how likely is someone to have a recurrence of colon cancer? Let's say they had the removal of the lesion, as you mentioned, if it's an early stage, and the chemotherapy, how likely are they to get colon cancer again?
So in early stage cancers, like stage one and stage two, usually the risk of recurrence is slightly minimal compared to the, when I say advanced stages, like stage three, where there is involvement of lymph nodes mm-hmm. and maybe invasion into the surrounding organs, there is always risk of recurrence. That's why we closely monitor those patients. For example, if early stage patient who got surgery, maybe he got chemotherapy as well because it was recommended for his appropriate stage. Me being a cancer doctor will check on him every 3 months for the first 2 years. And then after that, we will also do the CT scans as well with blood work every 6 months for the first 2 years. And then the surveillance would change to every 6 months for 5 years. We do that in the initial phases after the initial treatment, initial diagnosis and treatment, because there is a higher chances of recurrence in the first few months compared mm-hmm. to, let's say, after 5 years, usually the chances of recurrence is much lower. Sure. So to kind of answer your question, usually the earlier stages, the risk of recurrence is slightly lower. Advanced right. stages, the risk of recurrence is always slightly higher.
So it really reinforces getting your colonoscopy, mm-hmm. the early surveillance to make mm-hmm. sure you tackle it before it gets
right.
too aggressive.
Right, that is right. And then obviously when we look at the overall survival for the colon cancer patients, the patients who are detected early on, got treated early on, have 5 year survival rates of almost like 87 to 91%, whereas advanced stages where it has spread beyond the colon to other organs such as liver or lungs, it's actually less than about 20% or so. So if you see the difference in the survival from the early stage to the later stages, it actually emphasizes the surveillance for colon cancer, because if it is caught on early, it could be better treated to the point where we can actually achieve cure, compared to the advanced stages where we are mainly worried about controlling the disease and minimizing the symptoms, because cure could be difficult in the advanced stages.
Right, yeah. Well, we have Stephen on the line, and Stephen, we have Dr. Malaretti. What's your question?
Yes, good afternoon. I'm curious, you know, with MD Anderson being so close, do y'all have some kind of protocol or a team approach to where y'all work with MD Anderson if a patient needed, you know, or would like to use them as well?
Yeah, that's a very good question.
Have some kind of established, or your business has something established with MD Anderson?
Right, right. So that's a very good question. So we actually have a lot of patients that obviously, you know, every, even though when we talk about colon cancer in general, but every patient is present with a different presentation. They could have multiple treatment options. We do have multiple patients who we work with MD Anderson to get the treatment protocols and then help them if needed be to get that. They usually, some of our patients get treated here and get followed at MD Anderson. So we kind of facilitate that as well. We are consistently in contact with them for any patient who are already established at MD Anderson coming back here just for in between treatments or anything like that. We do have protocols in place.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Stephen, for your question. And if you have a question for the doctor, we're talking about colon cancer, if you're just now joining us, give us a call at 318-219-4569. And we have another caller, Ernie. What's your question?
Doc, how are y'all today? I'm kind of late getting in, y'all listening today. I was just wondering, in case this hadn't been asked yet, how do they determine the amount of years you go between different colonoscopies? Is it have anything to do with the amount of polyps that you might have in different sessions?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So, you know, as I was telling previously in our segment, that you know, you undergo different testings has different frequencies. When I say frequencies, like the time between the testing. So with colonoscopies, whenever the patient undergoes a procedure, they look at how many polyps are there, and once if they see a polyp, like you know, by the gastroenterology or general surgery, if they see a polyp, they take it out and send it for testing. It all depends on the number of polyps that they actually seen on that examination, and also what kind of polyp it is, right? Like there are different types of polyps. Some polyps have higher risk of developing into cancers, whereas other polyps might not have the same risk. They're probably at lower risk. So that is usually the total, if there are higher number of polyps and increased risk of cancer with that particular polyp, which is determined by the pathology. Obviously, the some patients might need colonoscopies more sooner than every 10 years. To kind of summarize that, it would be the total number of polyps and the type of polyps. It determines the time between each colonoscopy.
Okay, I appreciate it. I had my last one 2019, had 7 polyps, so am I good for 10 years?
It would be difficult to say that without seeing what kind of polyps they are, and it would be a good question. Usually the doctors who does the colonoscopies might decide whenever they look at the total number of polyps and the pathology report to determine whether you can go without the colonoscopy for 10 years or maybe you should get a colonoscopy for 5 years. We have to look at what kind of polyps they are as well before determining that.
Well, thank you very much, and you sound like you're very educated.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ernie. Well, if you have a question and you're just joining us, we have Dr. Cy Malaretti, and give us a call at 318-219-4569 to talk directly with our doctor. And you are very educated. I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. I'm able to help and spread awareness for the colon cancer, especially considering March is a colon cancer awareness month as well.
Absolutely, for sure, yeah. So tell us, Doc, what is immunotherapy? Is this a therapy that people with colon cancer can use or participate in?
Right, so for immunotherapy, it's kind of relatively newer compared to the chemotherapy. When I say relatively newer, it's been there for more than a decade at least. But it has a complex mechanism, but to put it in simple words, I usually explain it, immunotherapy as a treatment where it activates your own immune system to fight against the cancer. So it also actually tries to bypass the mechanisms through which the cancer cells escape our own immune system and kills the cancer cells. So it is a very important treatment option for a patient with colon cancer. And some patients might have, we do the genetic testing and specialized testing for all the colon cancer patients. Some patients who have higher genetic mutations, they might respond very well to this immunotherapy compared to the chemotherapy.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So let's say someone went through chemotherapy, colon cancer is gone, and maybe, oh, we also have another caller on the line, so we'll go ahead and take their call. Okay. What's your question? Do you mind turning down your TV? I think we're getting a little bit of feedback.
Yeah, there's another somebody being me to it.
Did you have a question for the doctor?
Yeah, about the diet. Like I said, I have a friend who's India. She was diagnosed with colon cancer, and she's avoiding everything with wheat. I mean, just eat a lot of salad, no red meat, nothing. Use salad, vegetables. And she's avoiding wheat, pasta, and everything.
Can you repeat your question? So,
Yeah. I want to ask the doctor, what about the diet? Can they avoid wheat, all the products, pasta, bread, and everything? She doesn't want to eat nothing like that because of, she says she cannot have wheat because of the colon cancer.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, I think she's talking about maybe asking what is the appropriate diet.
Yeah, for preventing it.
For preventing it. So I would say, as we were discussing previously, obviously diet less in the red meats and processed foods would decrease your risk of colon cancer. And also the diet which is rich in, like, you know, greens, fruits and vegetables, all of those things with increased fiber, as we talked about, it would improve your chances of not getting colon cancer. I mean, it would decrease the risk of getting colon cancer. And then we talked about the other habits, like, you know, cutting down on the smoking or stopping the smoking for smokers, and then cutting down on alcohol consumption, and also incorporating physical activity in your day. Mm-hmm. That means about 30 days, people don't have to exert themselves or push themselves too far. Anything that gets your heart rate up a little bit and makes you breathe a little more deeper would help, you know, in controlling the weight and decreasing the risk of cancer itself.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just overall healthy lifestyle.
That
more
is right.
Fruits and vegetables, less processed foods in general, mm-hmm. right? Less things that are in a box mm-hmm. will be helpful. Right. Yeah. Thanks for your question. Well, if you had a question, you can give us a call at 318-219-4569. We only have a couple minutes left, though, so go ahead and get those questions in. So, Doc, tell us, I think that I was in the middle of asking earlier, let's say I just had, went through the therapy of colon cancer and I don't have the cancer anymore. Mm-hmm. How does my life change maybe after, like, a resection or a removal of the cancer in my colon? Does my life change at all? Is it, you know, do I have limits or restrictions in the things that I eat or the exercises that I do after the therapy?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it all depends on how much of the colon that they had to take out, especially after the initial diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Some patients can have you know, abnormalities in obviously changes in the bowel movement patterns. There could be some weight loss, especially, you know, it's a good bit of a surgery, right? Recovering from the surgery itself would be a challenge. But over time, you know, it takes time, but over time things are gonna get back to normal. Mm-hmm. And we have, we usually work as a team, like, you know,
yeah.
you know, as we take help from, you know, dietitians or
yeah.
nutritionists to help to improve the nutrition of the patients in post-operative period
mm-hmm.
to get that healing going or to improve the overall nutritional status and physical activity
mm-hmm.
in patients in post-operative period.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So today we mentioned earlier that in the newscast at the 11 that it's National Margarita Day. So alcohol is a pretty big risk factor for any type of cancer.
Right.
I believe that the American Cancer Society says that limit to like 2 drinks a day for men, 1 drink a day for women.
Mm-hmm.
But even 1 drink, it still could increase your risk for cancer. Is that correct?
Yes, it could technically increase
mm-hmm.
it, but at least according to the guidelines, apparently, you know, you could potentially limit to 2 per man and 1 per woman.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it is still implicated as a risk factor for not only for colon cancer, but many other cancers as well.
Right.
It's involving the gut or, you know, I think there was a segment for esophageal cancer last time. Even that
mm-hmm.
increases the risk of esophageal cancers as well.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So tell us where let's say that I'm a patient and I want to reach out to you and get a consultation with you. What is the best way that I could find you, whether that's your phone number, website, address, all of those things, so that they can find you?
Yeah, so, I mean, we are located at the Willis-Naughton Cancer Center. It's right next to the Willis-Naughton North Hospital. It's easier to find us. If you just Google our name, I think you'd have most of the information to contact our clinic. And
mm-hmm.
our people representatives are very, like the public relations and people representatives are very enthusiastic in getting patients connected to their physicians.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime if somebody is diagnosed with a cancer, you don't know what to do, just give us a call to our clinic and we will try to get you into the clinic as soon as possible with our team of wonderful providers.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for this awesome information. I feel educated and I want to eat more vegetables to make sure I prevent my risk of colon cancer today.
Of course, yeah.
Well, thank you. This is Dr. Sai Malaretti, and we learned lots about colon cancer and how to prevent your risk. But that's a wrap for today's Healthline, and we hope you have a happy and healthy day.